Good morning, everyone in the KGNU metaverse. It's a beautiful morning, and welcome to Kitchen Table Talk. If you haven't listened to us before, you know, every week, of course, is Radio Nibbles. Kitchen Table Talk started a year ago because we thought we needed an hour of talking about food and agriculture and issues and cooking and everything else. And this morning, and we started a year ago with my guest host, Chef Dan Asher of River and Woods and Ashkara and any number of other places.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us. And yeah, 1 year anniversary, is that right, John?
Yes. Our first guests in the first show were Ann Cure and our dear friend Andy Clark.
Yes.
Who passed in the last year.
Yeah.
And it convinced us that there was just a lot to talk about food-wise.
And, and beyond.
Would you like to introduce our guests?
I would, yeah. I'm glad you gave a shout-out to the metaverse. Let me just tighten up my Oculus goggles real quick, John, so I can navigate this strange new reality of 6D. Is that where we're in now? 5D, 6D? I lost track after 4D. So, yeah, joining us this morning, super exciting, Mark Guttridge, co-owner and rock star master farmer of Olin Farms in Longmont, an amazing human being who I adore and who does wonderful things with hands and soil. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good morning. Really excited to be here.
Great. So good to have you. And Celine Diaris, also dear friend, amazing human being, founder of Regenerative Rising. How are you?
I am fabulous. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for coming in this morning.
And Celine, why don't you we know what Mark does, kind of, and we'll talk more about it, but tell us about you.
Well, thank you. Regenerative Rising is what I have been in the movement to elevate the regenerative conversation for, I don't know, 12 years. My organization began to bring the industry, primarily the organic food industry at the manufacturer level, the brands that people are familiar with. In 2017, we held our first Regenerative Earth Summit. And the Regenerative Earth Summit has been kind of a keystone in launching a larger understanding of what is potentialized when we bring in this idea that soil health, biodiversity, water protection is fundamental to how we eat and live and breathe and mm-hmm. have a healthy reality. So mm-hmm. I'm super excited to be in this conversation mm-hmm. because obviously, fundamentally, local is where it all happens. Mm-hmm. And it's fabulous to have a global view. But if we don't land that literally mm-hmm. where we are, then we're kind of missing the moment.
I was talking to Mark earlier about, you know, well, obviously, since I went on the air, but at the very least, in the last 12 years, the word regenerative is finally in our conversation. Things have changed
in that time. Absolutely. I mean, 2017 was the first summit, and it really was the beginning of a larger dialogue that has continued to expand.
But what are the farmers doing?
Well, the farmers are doing different things all over the planet, you know?
No, but that you're encouraging.
What are we encouraging around this? Well, I think a lot of farmers are doing certain dimensions of stewardship to their land. They have a deep investment in that land being productive. However, the large share of agriculture in this country is conventionally managed. And with conventional agriculture, the use of herbicides, pesticides, fungicides, all sorts of sides, which all are a death knell towards some target, has really had a longstanding, over the last 50 plus years, detrimental impact, not only on the health of that locality, with soil being probably one of the first losers.
Yeah.
The microbiome, there's like a whole living universe below our feet that most of us really didn't even know we should be interested in until rather recently, and we're still learning a lot about that. And there's been a lot of correlation between the human biome in our gut and the corollary to this diversity of life in the soil. Years ago, when I was working for the Organic Center, I learned this incredible insight about soil. Like, literally, a tablespoon of soil has like 6 billion forms of life in it. And when you contemplate that, you're like, the number of humans on the planet is, what, 8 billion? And you think about in a healthy little scoop of
thriving, vibrant soil, right?
You're talking like a dimensionality of life that so blows our mind if we can even try to comprehend it. So chemicals and all of those onslaughts have destroyed that complexity of life. And then you get above ground and you're looking at an incredible detriment to all the things that fly and flit and crawl and creep. And then you move to that as a runoff impact into our waterways, and you get into the long web of connectivity that takes us to our oceans, and where you have these massive dead zones that are caused by all this nitrogen runoff of farms, which is another oil-derived input on agriculture to mimic what a much more ecological approach to farming would change.
Yeah, very much so. And that model, I think, would be defined purely as a one dimension, one direction extraction model. Right. How much can we take? How much can we yield? As opposed to a circular replenishment model, which is what regenerative ag is all about.
And since we have a farmer,
yes. Mark, how do you feel about extraction versus replenishment? Just curious. No idea where you're coming from on this, but
yeah, I'm so curious, Mark.
Something I've been thinking about over the last 16 years. So, yeah, we're all in farms together with my wife, Ken. I know she's listening. She's driving to work. She's a teacher in the community here, teaching Spanish. And so, hi, Ken. Safe driving. And, that was a big – when we started the farm, like, that was our big thing. We wanted healthy food for our family. And the more we looked into it, the more it's like it's about the soil. It's about the living soil. And that's what we spent the first like 10 years of Olin Farms. This is our 16th year in business providing local food to our community. And the first 10 years was all about nutrient-dense food. How do we grow the healthiest food possible? And that comes from a healthy soil that has all those microorganisms and fungi and everything working. So we spent 10 years just dialing in. How do we maximize that soil health? And I think it was about like 2017, 2018 that just a number of events happened where our focus went bigger than just the soil and looking at our whole ecosystem around the farm and around our community and around the world. There was just a lot of pressure, a lot of crazy changing weather, a lot of less biodiversity we were seeing in a lot of our systems around the community. And so we realized how do we take what we learned in the soil and branch it out to really grow healthy food as possible, but also make a really resilient ecosystem all around us. So that's when we started working with people like PPAN, People Pollinators Action Network, who've been hosting a lot of great pollinator planting events, getting involved with Boulder County Sustainability Office, looking at carbon sequestration. How can we use plants to get carbon out of the atmosphere and into the soil? Been able to get it.
And mushrooms,
yeah. Working with Zach from Boulder Mushrooms, getting spent mushroom blocks onto the farm, using that to decompose wood. And just looking like one of our biggest issues on the planet right now is we're sending a ton of valuable high carbon material to the dump, where it could be going back to farms and turned back into soil. Mm-hmm. Be actually growing healthy topsoil. So that's been our goal, is like, how can we physically grow a new, healthier topsoil around our production fields, around the creek ecosystems that we manage on Left Hand Creek? And yeah, there's no chemical fertilizers, or there's no pesticides, herbicides, any of that stuff. Like, it's all very life-giving, and that's kind of what regeneration is all about. It's like, it's physically growing a new topsoil. Sustainable is just sustaining what we have, but we saw like it was a great wet winter, and here we had these winds last Friday that blew half of our open space away. The stuff that isn't being managed with a lot of chemicals.
So you're watching your wealth just blow away.
Right.
It's our collective wealth,
it's our collective wealth. Yeah. The regenerative farms, our farms, we didn't see soil blowing away. Like some of our row covers and things we were chasing down, but when there's life in the soil, it doesn't blow away. And we saw a lot of our collectively owned Boulder County open space land, a lot of our collectively owned like Hall Ranch area where they've been doing a ton of herbicide research over the last 5 years, open space has, like that was what was blowing like crazy last week.
Wow.
So it's a big wake-up call, like, hey, like let's... How come our open space can't get more on board with regenerative farming and figure out ways to manage this more holistically all around?
100% agree with you, Mark. I've been involved both at the county level in the conversation about how our stewardship should be filtering into all of the ways in which we interact. And I think a lot about we as home owners, what are people doing on their own properties? And I was just in one of the big superstores and saw the giant crate of Roundup. And it really, I think probably, I can't really compare what that is for me, knowing what I know, how heart-wrenching when I see people thinking that that's a good solution for their home management of their yards.
Or having grass, one thing. You're listening to Kitchen Table Talk on KGNU, and we're talking about regenerative farming, and we're going to talk a little bit about how to cook the crops, because they're finally coming in the market is open. And would you like to reintroduce our guest?
Yes. Yeah, joining us this morning, we have Mark, co-owner and farmer from Olin Farms, and Selene, founder of Regenerative Rising. And we're having a beautiful and very necessary dialogue about the difference between restoring and extracting.
And also, we welcome your calls down here at KGNU. We'd love to hear what you think, your questions and comments. You can call 303-442-4242.
Yeah, please call in. We'd love to answer questions and have an open community dialogue.
So, Mark, you're growing, I think you said, 100 and some odd different crops.
Yeah, this year our seed order was something around 130 different varieties of 30 different crops. And over the years, we've been adding more and more perennials as a big part of our regenerative focus. So that doesn't even include those numbers, which just keep coming back.
You have a farm stand on, is it 95th?
Right, yeah, we're in South Longmont, kind of know where 119 hits over. We lease open space land there, and then we also have our little farm stand that just opened last Saturday was our grand opening. We had a big spring festival out there. I spent 3 hours.
And you have a CSA.
And we have a CSA. We have that people can order online at olinfarms.com. We have pickups there at the farm. We also have pickups here in Boulder at your graduate and family housing at CU, and then a growing pickup at Lafayette at an Odd 13 brewery, which was a new partnership we formed last year. That's,
that's
been
great.
Really, really and you fun. Also,
Odd 13's awesome.
Right, and you supply, which I think is the most wonderful thing, is that you supply produce, fresh produce, to the Boulder Valley school system, and you also... I mean, your farm has turned into an educational facility for kids.
That's exactly true. Kenna runs all the youth education programs out there. We have youth summer classes. And that's the big part to me that around regenerative agriculture is when we're thinking holistically, we have to think about the community as part of the farm. And that's been our big focus for the last 3 years since the pandemic. And just finding different ways to get kids engaged and families engaged at the farm, whether it's our festivals where we're given hayride to see the animals, our farm stand every Saturday. This weekend, we're having like a spring gardening demonstration out there, 11 to 2, and we're going to be planting gardens around the farm stand. People can see how we use our own compost and biochar and row covers and compost tea that we're brewing up that day. And it'll be just a demonstration of all our practices so people can go and get their spring gardens kickstarted as well.
Right.
I'm just jumping in to say my first time to the farm was for bird watching. Mm-hmm. Elena Claver, who also has a show here, she hosted a bird watching for kids. And
oh, wow.
You have some amazing birds out along the creek as well.
It's an amazing spot, and we love sharing. That's where we do our farm dinners during the summer. We're having a big Earth Day planting on Saturday, the 22nd. We're going to be doing creek restoration down and providing more habitat for those beautiful birds. And then I think one of the fun ones that we're really organizing is like a Healthy Moms Festival at the beginning of, right before Mother's Day. I think it's maybe the 11th or 12th, the Saturday before Mother's Day, that we're going to have a lot of just nutritionists out there, doctors out there, yoga people, fresh food. Like, how do we make sure our moms, like the cornerstone of our communities, are treated as healthy as possible and respected as much as possible.
And I love that.
Amen on that.
Any healthy?
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Any healthy desserts?
Of course.
I'm kind of focused.
That's about rhubarb pie time of year, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, pie. I don't know if anyone here in the studio enjoys pie.
No.
Anyone?
No.
No. No, no, not me. No pie.
So, Dan.
Yes.
What's going on with you? And you must be looking towards...
springtime?
Well, the changing menus and bringing crops in, and tell us a little bit about that
Very
and how you're
so.
Approaching it.
Yeah, I think, using seasonality as an inspiration for cooking in general is essential, I think, for how we feed our families and letting everyone know the difference between, you know, a carrot that's been shipped 3,000 miles in the middle of a season that doesn't necessarily make sense compared to a locally grown amazing carrot that just came out of the soil, you know, the morning that you received it. So huge difference in, I'm glad we're talking about nutrient density because that's extremely important. Always my thing is always lead with flavor. You can't argue with deliciousness. So you can talk all you want about making responsible choices in our food system and supporting local and doing good work and being a thoughtful steward. But from a consumer standpoint,
you got to make them hungry.
If it's not delicious and craveable, then a lot of that fades away, unfortunately. So I think we all have a responsibility to know how to work with these incredible ingredients that are that are being raised and harvested with such a high level of intention and vision. You know, a lot of that comes down to anticipating flavor profiles and genre.
And that's nice and philosophical, Dan. But,
yeah.
But what are you, what's coming in?
I'm looking at, at asparagus. Radishes are fantastic. Different beans are evolving. Greens, fantastic. Local arugula, spring mix, cucumbers, which we use in our amazing house pickles at Ashkara, I think are coming in next week, if I'm not mistaken. Beautiful. Springtime, I think, is a really renewal and just a time to refresh. And regroup.
You know what I like about spring is that there's sort of these little oddities like garlic scapes things that only come up like
fiddlehead ferns
and ramps.
Aren't really
a thing here.
Well, yeah, but you can. Well, they can be. Yeah, they definitely are. But there's such a narrow window for things like that where it's like they're very limited, and it's like probably a 3-week window of availability.
The other thing that
they go very quickly because everyone's waiting for them.
The other thing people forget about are blossoms, right? You know, like squash blossoms, especially. But
dandelions are actually a really delicious food for us. So are their leaves, so are their roots. So that's something that probably everybody's yard could offer them up.
Nettles
pretty
also.
Soon.
And
nettles.
And don't get me started on dandelion wine. I'll just get really nostalgic. And stuff.
Nettles, too, are great. Talk about highly medicinal, amazing ability to utilize in so many different ways, from tea to fiber to,
That's the big thing is, like, Mother Nature always gives you what you need at that moment. So, yes, we have to lead with flavor, and then we have to train people to eat seasonally because that's actually the healthiest things for us. That's why in the spring when we're outside and running around, we get all these fresh greens and all these medicinal plants, get our immune systems going again. In summer when we can, like, it's so hot outside, we got the cucumbers and the watermelon, all those juicy things keeping us going.
But let's just talk a little bit about using, you know, one of the best things that's come out of the movement, I think, is in terms of animal protein, is this whole animal approach. That if you're going to raise raise animals, that you use the entire being. And I think that goes for vegetables too. I'm always horrified with what people throw away. You know,
you can make great vegetable broth with all the parts that you don't find your most desirable. Like even the skin of an onion, if you hold on to that, I have bags in my freezer of like the stems from broccoli and the skin of the onions. And then I throw it all into a pot and make these amazing vegetable broths that then become the base of a beautiful soup.
I always highly encourage having a little container on the counter that obviously there's, you know, a composting idea, but before that stage, there's so many scraps that can be utilized to make stock. I completely agree.
Or feed my neighbor's chickens.
Or
sure.
Or
yes.
Or when it comes to greens from beets and other things, that you can turn it into pesto. And
that's a very good way to utilize.
If you have any questions.
I have a question before you open it up to everybody.
Oh, we have a caller.
I'm here in the studio, so I'm in line first. This whole talk about using the complete plant or all of the animal, I'm wondering. I mean, that's something that's very common in Mexico, and I wanted to ask Mark. I mean, Kenna is originally from Mexico. How much did you learn from her about being able to use the entirety of a plant?
And absolutely, even looking at plants that we think of as weeds here, like purslane here, doesn't get the best reputation. But in Mexico, that's like cherries, has verdolaga, so you can slow saute that up. But like with the green chili pork dish, it's like off the charts, out of this world. Same with like lamb's quarter, which they call calitas. Some of the more surprising things is like the whole animal, and we see like tacos de lengua and tacos de cabeza and tacos de estomago.
Oh, wow. So good. Buche.
I like the cheeks.
Well, and you can learn a lot if you look south, basically. Yeah, you can learn a lot if you just like listen. These are not new concepts. They might be new concepts to conventional agriculture.
You're
absolutely right. They're not new concepts.
Every poor culture around the world, in my case, you know, I come out of Sicilian American. It wasn't an option not to use everything, and you figure out how to turn it into something wonderful.
That's true. I want to just give a shout out to Golden Hoof, which is a local farm here in the Boulder County area.
But it's different.
Well, it's raising animals, and so you brought up that whole animal idea, and one of the things that they do so beautifully is offer up the totality of when they go into the slaughter phase. If you want bone broth or if you want bones for your dogs to chew on, I mean, they keep everything and put it back into the store for members who... So I highly encourage people who want to be eating from the land locally when it comes to your eggs and your meat and your different types of fowl and lamb and beef. Golden Hoof does a remarkable... a beautiful way of raising those animals in community. And interestingly, and you may know about this, you know, we've had this avian flu breakout.
Oh my gosh, it's been horrible.
There's a bit of a tragedy that I just want to shout out for folks to understand, because that farm had avian flu, but they healed all of their animals naturally. But the USDA came in and said, you still have to kill all of them. So
Really?
Because they didn't want it to spread.
But it hadn't spread. It was contained and the animals were well. They had used a way, you know, naturally to recover the health of their animals.
Protocol.
Exactly. Thank you, Mark. So it had nothing to do with that spread notion. It was just like, oh, well, sorry, we're not going to let these healed animals remain alive.
And I don't need to, flash us back to the horrors of the, you know, past 3 years in terms of food and food supply. But
that's why there was a huge egg shortage across the country.
But throughout all this, there actually were local eggs available, while the shelves are sometimes empty at supermarkets.
Well, yeah. I think we learned a lot about the resilience of local food systems versus the opposite.
I believe we have a caller.
We do have a caller. But before I open up the phone lines, I want to do the station ID, KGNU, FM 88.5 Boulder, KGNU 1390 Denver. And on the line, we have Waylon from Longmont. Good morning, Waylon.
Good morning. Greetings from the ancestral homelands of the Cheyenne, Arapaho, Ute, and Ocheti Shakowin. Greetings, everyone.
Greetings.
I was hearing some beautiful things this morning, but I was hearing some pretty unoriginal ideas from some unoriginal people, and I'm like, oh man, I got to chime in on this stuff here. Mexico, oh beautiful. Sicilian people, oh beautiful. But like, you know, these food systems and this resilience that we're talking about, you know, there's some indigenous people that get left out all the time. And I'm like, man, I can't believe that this happens all the time. Even this morning in Longmont and Woke, Boulder County, right? And I'm like, man, I can't believe, like, why aren't we talking about, like, some of the original food systems? Why aren't we talking about some of the trade routes? Why aren't we talking about revitalizing languages for Native people in the area? You know, I mean, that's a global thing, like localizing.
Completely.
Revitalizing indigenous languages. The land and the food have a relationship.
They language certainly do. Yeah, yes. You're
yada,
absolutely
yada,
right.
I'm just going to cut myself off, and I will take y'all's comments off. What is it they say? On the air? Is that how it goes?
Yes.
Yeah. We are on the air live.
Yes, Waylon, thank you. Thank you for that. Very much so.
I'm happy to jump in. Yeah, Waylon, thank you so much for that. And that is a big piece of the regenerative movement. Like, none of these ideas are new. Like, it's how the only time we've ever had a civilization on this continent that really worked well with nature was before all the white people showed up and started extracting everything. And so a lot of these systems, whether how did we get any soil here, was the rotation. It was buffalo naturally rotating and grazing. So that's what a lot of these small farmers are trying to mimic in their rotational grazing of animals, not over grazing any area. And you can actually build soil and build ecosystems that way. And I think there is a great opportunity to reconnect. I know the city of Boulder, I know Boulder County, I know there's more, even at USDA, I see more equity grants coming out looking to how do we get resources back to the Native American people that still are here. We're at our farm, we've been trying to find ways to partner with Wind River Reservation up in Wyoming and have like a exchange of ideas and exchange of soil building techniques. And so Waylon, I'm in Longmont, please stop by Olin Farms, talk to Ken and I. We have projects that what you're talking about is exactly what we're working on, and we'd love to connect, so please come by and talk to us sometime.
Yeah, Waylon, I really appreciate your comments. My organization, Regenerative Rising, has been bringing the voice of the less heard forward for many years. And our podcast, Regenerative Rising's Elevating Voices, Activating Change podcast, I would encourage you to check that out. We have some beautiful interviews, conversations with Native American leaders who are restoring the buffalo to huge tracts of land in the Dakotas, which is There's a study that just I saw very recently that was talking about keystone species and a rewilding movement that needs to happen globally, because these species have huge effects on the quality of health of the land. And the bison is obviously a significant one for this part of the world. So you're absolutely right. I absolutely want to see us have deeper dialogue around the missing links in how we perceive how was this landscape healthy in the past. And it was really much more open grasslands. This is a prairie. This is really supposed to be a grasslands.
Yes.
There are two trees native to this place. And you look at what humans have done to change the character. Prairie dogs should be in ample numbers. Bison should be in ample numbers. Those are codependent species, actually. So we've disrupted and continue to disrupt landscapes all over the West in a detrimental way.
I think one of the last wild herds of bison are on the eastern plains of Colorado.
And I wanted to add a little good news. I pay attention to kind of statistics and things and surveys. Our friends at Nielsen, you know, usually they're just recording what people watch on TV, but they just came out with a survey that says that 75% of millennials have adapted their buying habits to support regenerative practices that restore soil and biodiversity and increase carbon capture.
That's impressive.
And I think that's what cheers me about the future. is that there's a whole generation coming along that are going to make their choices. They're going to insist.
I agree with you, and I will just counter by saying, unfortunately, however, the amount of land in agricultural production in the United States is, you know, and this is not a statistic people like to hear, less than 1%, and this has been true for 30 years of the organic movement, less than 1% mm-hmm. of acreage in the United States is actually managed organically. The 99% of that land is managed the way we were talking about earlier in the conversation with the herbicide, pesticide, GMO cropping mm-hmm. systems. And I know that, you know, Mark is not at all unaware of, we're having a niche conversation right now, and we're also having a privileged conversation mm-hmm. right now. Food access in a lot of places is very, very limited and only crap for food. I mean, you look at the health profile of the American populace, and it is deeply tied to the fact that much of the food that passes as food should be P-H-O-O-D. It's not real food. It's not nutrient-dense food. It's not anything like what Chef...
Highly processed.
Yeah, highly processed. And it comes from a deep derivative strategy for producing cheap food.
And consumers,
cheap calories.
Consumers also have to be willing to pay.
We're not calorie deficient. We're nutrient deficient.
We're nutrient deficient. And we're also spending a lot of money on our health. And that's maybe not a cost that people think about when they think about spending more money on good food.
I have another question. And this is also for Mark. There at BVSD, as far as having access to food, BVSD has been working with farmers locally to get healthy food into the schools. And for a lot of families, like, that's the biggest meal of the day. Some kids might have breakfast and lunch at school. So what is the nature of the partnership between local farmers with high quality food and school systems like BVSD?
And that's one of the kind of most exciting things. So here we are in Boulder County. We're privileged in a lot of ways, but at the same time, there's been farmers going out of business even in the last 20 years here like crazy. It's still a hard place to make a living as a farmer.
Yeah.
And so there has to be support on both sides. And so what we've been able to see is some really progressive thinking going on, starting with like Ann Cooper, the way she redid the entire BVSD. And now she's in retirement, and this still continues on and continues to grow. Like, she built a system that is amazing, can be blueprinted in other districts. And for this first time this year, we started supplying food thanks to some USDA grants to the St. Vrain Valley School District as well. So even last month, we were taking our storage radishes. We're in all the salad bars in both BVSD and St. Vrain Valley School District. And
that's great.
And that was some nutrient-rich radish.
It was amazing.
That's
awesome. Colorful in the salad bar. And then another big exciting program that, I mean, we kind of had some criticism with the county earlier about open space, and we've heard criticism about land use department on the show before. But I'll tell you what, there's two departments that are absolutely thinking so progressively and just killing it on the getting healthy food and supporting farms to where it needs to be. And that's Boulder County Public Health. We've been partnering with them for a number of years on this farm to ECE. So they have like a early childhood programs, all the preschool programs. I think there's like something like 70 that are enrolled in this program where they get bags of vegetables. We're going to be providing CSA shares to all those preschools this year. We host them for field trips out at the farm to connect them. And then the sustainability office has been the first time ever just investing directly in local farmers that are need infrastructure projects to support regenerative markets, to be able to get the infrastructure they need to do regenerative farming. And through different grants, they've been able to really invest in local farmers in a positive way.
I love it.
And
that's fantastic.
If you'd like to join our conversation here down at KGNU, this is Kitchen Table Talk. We're talking about regenerative farming. We're going to also talk about how to cook some of these wonderful crops that are coming out. You can call 303-442-4242.
And we do actually have a couple of callers on the line.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Great.
Cool. Okay, first up is Rich in Boulder. Good morning. Rich, you're on the air.
Hello, Rich.
This is Lynn.
Oh, well, Lynn is on the air. Good morning, Lynn.
Yeah, I want to hear from Rich Andrews, no doubt, too. But, no, I wondered about how you cured your chickens and how that could be applied to all the chicken farms
and also how that could be applied to vaccination of humans.
Well, Lynn, unfortunately, I don't know how the folks at Golden Hoof were able to bring the health back of their chickens when they were affected by the avian flu. But Golden Hoof is on, I think, 75th and also
Valmont.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So they are a member-only organization. I highly encourage you to become a member and have a conversation with the farmers there and how they were able to make that positive outcome happen for their birds. Although, as I said, they still were required to destroy all of them, nevertheless.
Okay, now I believe this would be Rich in Boulder. Good morning, Rich.
Hi there. Yeah, this is Rich Andrews. I have a small farm here in Boulder County, always organic. And I'd love to hear from other organic folks like Mark and so forth. My question this morning is, I haven't heard mention of the incredible crossover benefit of organic farming to help solve our climate problem. And how important using good, clean agricultural processes are to improving soil health, which has that direct connection with carbon sequestration in our soils.
So important. Yes.
Entirely. Yeah.
Organic, regenerative, these terms get thrown around perhaps, and in our conversation we didn't really speak to that healthy biome we were talking about earlier is also tied to having roots in the ground and that whole relationship that Mother Nature geniusly has been offering us for so long is a system designed to pull carbon into the soil through the root system, feed all these other microbiome creatures, and then turn around and produce oxygen for us to breathe. So you're absolutely right. And organic agriculture is the mothership. And everything else builds upon that because it is the most intelligent way to relate to a local ecosystem, to be in service to the soil health, the biodiversity health. All of these things are interconnected. And we tend to think in a bifurcated way as humans. We've gotten really enamored with this notion of breaking things down into small bits and not seeing the whole. And I loved that Mark just mentioned holistic agriculture is it's the frame. You have to see things as living systems of interconnectivity. It changes everything.
I believe we have another call.
Well, first we have a question that came in over email.
Oh, about poop.
Exactly, about poop. So maybe you said, are you poop or anti-poop in your compost? Since you are whole animal, poop is part of it.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, Dan, are you pro-poop or anti-poop?
John, I'm a huge fan of poop. I'm an advocate for poop.
Composted poop, though.
Yes.
You need to compost that poop for it to become, really useful.
Yes. Right. At home, we're using organic compost with poop and mushroom and all sorts of beautiful, amazing things that have been broken down and compost from the kitchen and all sorts of scraps and deliciousness.
That said, it depends on the poop.
Yeah, we're looking for high-quality animal. So we've actually been partnering with EcoCycle to do our own on-farm composting for the last couple of years, doing an aerated static pile where there's PVC pipes blowing air up through the compost. A farmer doesn't have to go out and turn it all the time because veggie farmers don't have the equipment to go turn big piles. And so we use manure from our chickens and our sheep, and when we clean out their bedding areas, and that's kind of our primary compost. And we're talking about the bucket on the kitchen counter earlier,
yeah.
And that goes to the chickens, mm-hmm. And then once a year we scoop up the chicken floor and mm-hmm. compost that.
But we're really talking about it takes a year to create for it to go through its process.
With aerated piles, it's almost like 3 to 4 months that you can get a finished product. I'm excited
that's
about
great.
Poop right now because we actually just got a new poop spreader for the first time in 16 years of farming.
Wow.
We're not going to be using the bucket on the Yahoo. On the tractor and rake.
Look at that. That's
and that
great.
Is thank you to Boulder County Sustainability Office. And it's part of the answer about Rich question, too. That's one question that the County Sustainability Office has is like, how can we use agriculture? How can we use land management to sequester carbon out of the atmosphere and be more of part of the solution. So they awarded grants to five different organizations through their Climate Impact Fund last year. And so we were one of those organizations that were setting up a five-year trial where we have one of our fields that on open space property that some are going to be receiving compost, homemade compost, some are going to be receiving biochar, all of them are going to be receiving our compost teas that we're making. And over 5 years, we're going to be able to track like which of these organic and regenerative techniques actually work here in Boulder County for growing new topsoil.
And rotational grazing.
Right. And before we go to the next call, that's what I appreciate about your approach, Mark, is this scientific, you know, attention to detail. The only way to prove it is to go ahead and do it, and you do it.
And that's what we have. That's the biggest weakness in the regenerative movement is the lack of data behind it.
For
the last 50 years, been paying farmers to grow cheap calories and cheap protein, and that's that chemical system. I think right now we're at a place where we're ready to start paying farmers to grow healthy ecosystems. But until we have that, know what that looks like in numbers, it's really hard to drive a policy.
I want to just point out that the USDA put $2 billion into Climate Smart Ag grants this year. My organization participated in two of those grants, and the groups are all, I mean, massive numbers of nonprofits around the country organizing themselves into collectives to pursue how do we bring a much more earth-centric, soil-friendly, local or grown agriculture to the U.S. system, and they've invested $2 billion into this, which is huge.
But the key word there is local. We have another caller.
Yes, we do. Up next is Jan in Denver. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning. I'm calling because neonicotinoids have been a big issue for me because so many people don't know what they are, and they're innocent buying their plants and seeds that are treated with it. And I was shocked because we have a friend who teaches ecology at the University of Colorado. And he was saying that Denver parks are treating all of their flowers and shrubs with herbicides and pesticides, in particular neonicotinoids. So
that's horrible.
I think that locally, we really need to get the word out there and pressure the city to stop because our pollinators have so few places now. Such limited open space at this point.
I would actually like to jump in just because this is something that has been on my radar. This is Shannon Young, the news director at KGNU. There is an event tonight, actually, for anybody who would like to learn more about pollinators and especially local pollinators. It's through Boulder County. It's called Buzz Buzz Pollinators Abound. And it's basically you're going out on a walk on parks and open space. It's tonight. It's, well, this afternoon. April 6th at 5 p.m. So if you'd like to find out more about that, you can go to bouldercounty.gov and just look up Buzz Buzz Pollinators Abound. But there's quite a bit of interest right now in this particular topic.
There's also a pollinator license plate that I encourage everyone to look at.
Let's just talk about, you know, people listening at home, people like me that are going to have a patio or backyard garden. The way you avoid the substance is by
going to local farm stands and asking them directly, like, are any of these, do you buy any plants or get any seeds treated with neonics? At the farmer's market, the answer is going to be no. At the local farm stands you're going to, the answer is going to be no. Maybe Home Depot and Lowe's, you might be getting some yeses there. So
yeah.
Just be a little bit aware.
Harlequin Gardens here in Boulder has fabulous starter plants, none of which, they make a point of educating people that they're not doing that. And just
and
going back
soil.
To...
And tea. They and good compost tea.
Yeah, and I just want to acknowledge the caller about what you just reached out to us about because, you know, the disconnect you're pointing to is enormous between what are we doing in our city structures and then what are we advocating for. So this is going to require more citizens kind of educating themselves, getting involved and making phone calls and being in part of these conversations because it is a big problem, actually, the disconnect. You can look at golf courses have huge infrastructure spaces.
Oh, and we have another caller.
And we have another caller.
The boards are popping.
We have three callers
Woo-hoo!
On the line. The
Ooh,
first
this is
the
great.
First is somebody who is calling back. So I'm going to ask you, Rich, to please be brief since this is your follow-up question. Rich, you're on the line.
Yeah, thanks again. I didn't really get to expand on what I believe to be the incredible extent of the effect of chemical agriculture on greenhouse gas emissions. And it is very important, but I want to know why our own state university here, Colorado State, and some of its folks just don't get it.
Money.
And one of them even is an entity at CSU that does modeling to supposedly compare greenhouse gas emissions from different manners of farming, yet they don't use a holistic view, and they totally distort the answers.
You're Rich, right, they so do.
Rich, do you have a question?
If anyone could comment on that, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Rich.
Thank you.
I mean, I hate to say it, but unfortunately, you have to follow the money trail. And in so many of these instances, you look at where funding is coming from for university ag schools. They're getting a lot of support from the folks who have an interest in their maintaining a conventional argument.
Okay, back to the phone lines. This person says unknown name. So if you called in anonymously, you're up. Hello?
Oh, hi.
Yes.
This is Michael, and I've been hearing a lot of things from CSU about the negative use of manures because of salts. And could someone there explain if that's a real problem or why they're saying that, why they're saying that salts in manures are bad?
Mark?
I mean, it's all a balancing thing. So, like, particularly when we didn't use any compost or manure in our fields for the first 10 years just because we had high potassium, and potassium is a salt that comes in compost. And if it gets out of balance, it can decrease nutrient density because it's preventing other things from getting up into the plant. So it's really the quality of the compost. Like, there's some if it's not well composted, there could be a lot of like sodium salts from dairies and places. Like, you just got to be careful with which manures you're using and what builds up over time. Because typically you're going to use the nitrogen, but the phosphorus and the potassium are going to build up.
Again, goes back to science. I believe we have another call.
Oh yes, we do. Let's see. Up next is Liz in Boulder.
Hi, Liz. Yes.
I wanted to go for a long shot here and make the connection between war and the economics of war and the economics of farming. And, you know, in Vietnam, Dan Ellsberg was working for the Secretary of Defense that said what we should do in Vietnam.
Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Is flood the rice paddies. And then, since that wouldn't just be killing people, then pay the people so that they can do their farming, the rice farming. So in the same sense, I've gone to Boulder County meetings where they talk about all the herbicides the farmers do. And what we really should be doing is talking about how it's cheaper to pay off the farmers to transition them than it is, you know, than anything else.
Thank you.
I want to just call out some allies in our community that are doing a lot to work with local farmers, and that would be Mad Agriculture, and also a group out of California that's also doing work here in Colorado, Zero Food Print. Mm-hmm. So both of these groups are definitely having an opportunity to work with farmers to have these types of conversations, Liz, where they're showing them alternatives to the status quo and helping demonstrate, and I think Mark has pointed this out also, you know, so much of what we're needing to do right now is gather information, gather insight. And our soils are clay-ish soils out here in the West. And we've really are great at growing grass, but there's lots of opportunity to change our relationship to how we do. If you think about conventional agriculture, what are we growing out here, Mark? Yeah. We're growing corn. Which is a high water plant.
Soybeans.
Things beets. That don't really make sense to our water supply.
Right.
If you drive anywhere going westward, you will see corn growing in the most ridiculous places.
It's
so,
true.
You know, I'm always frustrated by the lack of sort of thoughtfulness around how we're doing agriculture as a nation, and then what we're doing locally needing a huge ratcheting into some new opportunities. But it's a complex issue, people, because, you know, we're talking about livelihood and longevity of practice
and
in
access,
place
and
access. And yeah, it's
well,
it's
Matt
complicated.
Ag, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Phil's programs that started Matt Ag was research with the black soldier fly in regards to compost and ability to transform food into nutrient-dense compost for food. And zero food print, amazing. Thanks for bringing that up, because 1% of our sales at River and Woods in Ashkara goes to zero food print farms in the area, which is amazing.
We do have another caller, Perry in Boulder. Perry, you are on the air.
I'm wondering why we're not using a lot more livestock on our grasslands, because we have more than, if carbon is really such a problem with our global warming issue, we have more than enough grasslands around the world, when they're grazed, to take up all the carbon that mankind is putting out. And when they're not grazed, the grasses grow and they fall down and they rot and they produce methane and carbon.
Yep. No, your point is very well taken. I mean, I think that's where the rewilding conversation becomes a really powerful opportunity for us to be thinking about how do we reintroduce keystone species back into their natural habitats, and how do we create larger portions of landscapes, particularly here in the West, where we're working towards restoration of prairie, which is the most endangered ecosystem on the planet.
And yeah, to answer the question too, like the reason we don't see more of it is farmer economics. Like it's just, I know I have a lot of farm friends that are grazing animals, ranging animals, and it's just moving fences. It's a lot of physical work to move those animals, and it has to be subsidized in some way. Like all this area up in Hill Ranch where we're spraying all this herbicide for control of cheatgrass, like instead of spending all that money that goes to Bayer and to outside researchers, like we could be investing in small goat herd farmers, cow farmers, and actually invest in our local community to go out and graze that, prevent the cheatgrass from getting out of control, and more importantly, be fertilizing that and preserving that land a lot better, because by removing the animals from that system, it's doomed. Like there's no fertility re-input into that system.
It's unnatural, actually. And I think one of the things that we have forgotten is like what are natural systems and how do they function? And if you step back and envision the complexity of life that's always in place, wherever you're looking at healthy ecosystems, there's diversity of life. So what Mark is saying, if we're going to mimic natural systems in agriculture, then we have to have animals moving through that land. And there's some incredible, you being one, and there are also Aspen Moon Farms. They are a biodynamic organic farm here in Boulder County, and they move cattle over their land when it's resting in between the cropping seasons. So there are very precise, understood methodologies that just need to be widely embraced, actually. I mean,
Mark,
some of this is behavior and habits.
No, it's true. Right. And rotational grazing, holistic land management is expensive to do. And Mark, if you can speak to that for a moment, and tuning back into what Waylon had mentioned, you know, the difference between the needs of, you know, kind of fusing together science and the idea of intuition and letting the earth speak to you and tell you what it needs.
Yeah, I mean, this gets back to the very first comment we had, when it's a comment about extractive mentality versus this holistic regenerative mentality. And that's what we fundamentally need, is how do we relate to the earth? How do we realize that we're part of this natural system and not something that we're just trying to extract from? And that starts with our education program, with our kids, getting kids on farms. Like, that's the root cause of all this.
Kids on farms.
We're coming
That's
up.
Fantastic.
We're coming up towards the end of a really wonderful hour.
Wow. Yeah.
So many great calls.
We need another hour.
Yeah.
Yeah,
really.
We do.
We really. we covered so much, and we could have covered so much more.
And lively phones. Yeah.
Yes.
That was great.
But let's wrap it up with our guests. Mark Guttridge, some final thoughts and what you're looking forward to in the season ahead here.
I'm looking forward to an engaged community. Like, the only way that regenerative farming is going to happen in Boulder County is if consumers actively go out and support local farms. If you want to see healthy regenerative farming, find a local farm and support them directly. That's the only way it's going to survive here. And at Olin Farms, like, yeah, our farm stands open every Saturday, 11 to 2 now. We got our early season greens, a lot from some other really savvy, awesome local Boulder County farmers are carrying their products there as well. This weekend, we got the cooking, or we got the gardening demo going on, and there'll be a lot of events going on all summer long. So get the kids out to the farm, come out to the farm for a farm dinner, and eat something delicious.
Nice.
Celine, what's coming up for you?
Well, Regenerative Rising is producing the Regenerative Earth Summit in person in Denver on November 8th and 9th. Super excited about that. We have a monthly podcast, which I highly encourage people to check out. We're regenerativerising.org. I just want to also say, you know, we as local citizens, we start where we are. So if you have a yard, make sure you have a diversity of more native adapted plants, so you're using less water and you're providing food for the native flora and fauna who need the bats need to be able to eat, the hummingbirds who are going to be arriving soon need to eat, the native bees, the other types of critters that are flitting around. Just be mindful. Try to restrain yourself from using products that are meant to destroy life, and be welcoming of that dandelion, be welcoming of the diversity that's in your yard.
Excellent.
Dan, some final thoughts?
I want to say we're coming out of winter. Obviously, we have a few more dumps of snow heading our way, hopefully, from a water standpoint. But, you know, winter is a time of kind of like gathering inward and braising from a culinary standpoint, like slow, long braises and, you know, nourishment from these warm experiences of, you know, slow and low cooking. Whereas spring I look at as a time of like raw, crisp, fresh, light, clean. And that's also a time to kind of regroup and reassess how we connect to each other in the community. So I encourage everyone to jump into your local farm stand, look at what CSAs are available, support local agriculture first and foremost, grow whatever you can at home, educate your kids on the importance of these concepts, and support your local restaurants that are using these amazing ingredients.
The farmers markets are open now, so Longmont and Boulder farmers markets are happening on Saturdays.
And this is John Lendorf, your congenial host. I hope you'll join us a month from now for another Kitchen Table Talk, and join me every week on Radio Nibbles to continue the discussion.
Thanks, everyone. This
Thanks
was fantastic.
Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
Have a beautiful day. Beautiful week. Happy Earth Day coming up.
Woohoo!
Woo!